Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's Blasian beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
This is episode 80, everyone. I don't even know what I was getting ready to say. This is episode 80, y'all.
Just 20 more away from the triple digits.
Pearl is really fixated on triple digits, you
guys. Girl, as soon as I can say I made it to the 100th episode, oh my god, I'll say, like, I'm a true survivor, girl.
Oh, Lord. Well, 80 episodes is a pretty good mark of surviving, girl. So, we just want to give you a quick heads up. This episode, we're going to have some great interviews, and those are going to be coming for you in a little bit. Remember a few episodes back, we told you about our good friend, our good homegirl, Natalie Ray. She is a refugee from Russia, and she's performing here in the Bay Area in drag. So, we're going to have her on to talk to us about what it's like in Russia. It gives us a little bit of an international perspective. We know that we have listeners around the world.
Right.
Come on, Africa. Now we just need to find an African refugee.
That would be sick. Girl, that would be so sickening.
I wonder, you know
I
what?
Would live.
You know who we need to call? I'm going to call up Bibi Zaharia-Binet and talk to her, you know, what it was like in Cameroon and all that stuff. I mean, I think that would be a real interest to our international listeners. Also, we have one of probably the bigger interviews that we've ever done. We have 3-time Grammy winner, 1/5 of Pentatonix's Kirsten Maldonado on with us later in the group. Later in the group. Later in the episode. So she's got a new album out. It's called L-O-V-E. You guys can check that out. Meanwhile, Pearl, what was your weekend like for you, Henty?
Oh my god, girl. This weekend was insane for me.
I know you had a million shows.
4 shows in one day on Saturday. Girl, I was done. So, it started off with brunch over at The Lookout with Carney, and originally I was just going to support my girl Tiny, but they threw me in a couple times. Well, they threw me in once for the...
They had to have told you in advance they were doing that, right?
No.
You just showed up in drag?
Well, I showed up in drag because I had shows afterwards.
Oh, okay, got it. I was like, who the fuck just goes out in drag?
Right, and then...
At lunch.
Right after that, both me and Tiny headed over to Bo because Eva Sensitiva in her house was having a fundraiser for the trans employment program, and they raised over $1,000.
That's amazing. Congratulations, Eva Sensitiva.
And the trans employment program. I saw some of them down there. Such good people. So that was successful, and then right after that, I headed down to this venue called Wine Down for a private gig I had. It was like a gay bachelor kind of wedding celebration type gig that I did. Fast and easy, and then right after that,
girl,
I had DNA Lounge for Booty, for Beyonce Mashup Night, and that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
But Jesus, girl.
Well, I mean, I feel your pain, honey, because I only did one show on Saturday, but in advance of that, I felt like Lucy and Ethel when they were on the chocolate conveyor belt. Do you remember this scene? From That's how I felt with drag queens. It felt like there was just... Because I started the day off, I bumped into my homegirl, Marga Gomez. Do you know Marga?
I know Marga.
Very, very funny lesbian comedian here in the Bay Area. We've had her on the podcast before. So, no, actually, we haven't.
On my previous podcast.
Right.
Plenty of time. She's sweet.
So, bumped into Marga in the Castro. And she was, like, distraught because she was making her drag king debut at Oasis on Saturday. And she wanted to do a specialty character. And she didn't know how. So we ran into each other on the streets. And I said, you know what, girlfriend? Why don't you let me do your makeup? Because, you guys, she wanted to be Danny Trejo, the Latino actor who stars in the Robert Rodriguez film series Machete. And she wanted very specifically to be him. So we filmed a YouTube video putting her in her you know, preparing her for her drag king debut. Surf on over to my YouTube channel to watch our video. It was quite fun putting her in makeup. But then after that, I had to put myself in drag. And then my drag daughter, Shigella, showed up and I had to, like, sort of guide her. She's getting much better about putting herself in makeup, but...
All right.
Guided her. Then we ran across over to the Castro and I put my girlfriend, Vanessa Avenue, in drag. And then I helped my grandbaby, Miss Vicky Sparkletits, prepare for her wildly successful debut at Mascara.
Come on, Sober Queens.
Yes, girl. But then I had to go over to El Toro for my bachelorette gig, the Divas Royale, and Carney was actually in my show. She saved my ass because they asked me for another girl last minute.
Well, that's not surprising.
Girl, I mean, well, that is so not my doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not surprising that they asked me last minute, but I was just like, you guys, like, really? Because this time they asked me on Friday for two performers, and then they asked me for another one after that. It was like,
yeah,
I tried to explain, honey, drag queens, like most entertainers who get a lot of their work on the weekends, want to be booked in advance. But Carney really enjoyed it, and El Toro is such an incredible venue, and I'm really excited, you guys, to announce that my next drag adventure in production of events is going to be happening at El Toro, probably starting in October. Pollo Del Mar and Friends, the Pollo Del Mar and Friends show, PDM AF.
Cute.
At El Toro.
I love it.
And it's going to be a drag variety show. We do a lot of these things. I think in the gay community, the queer community, we see like a lot of typical drag shows where it's, you know, five of us or whatever, and we're doing two numbers each. But I wanted to do something really different. So what we're going to be doing at El Toro, with more details to come on Facebook and whatnot, is a drag variety and cabaret style show. I want live singing and dancing and stand-up comedians and circus acts. And
oh, cute.
Girl, I mean, have you ever seen that guy who does Wolfie the Puppet in the Castro? He'll do it at, like, 18th and Castro, like, does a puppet show.
Is he the guy that has, like, a whole, like, stand?
Yeah, and it's, like, it looks so cheap, but it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And I've seen him.
He's great.
He is great. And I wish I knew his name so we could give him a shout-out, but there's a guy who does street performance, basically. He's a puppeteer, and he has this box set up, and he does Wolfie the Puppet and whatever.
And he talks to, like, the audience and interacts with all of them. He's really fantastic.
And I want to, like, see if he would come and do it, because I've seen it. The first time I ever saw him, he was performing.
He would be great.
In a BART station. Like yeah, I mean, like, all this shit.
I've seen him in BART sometimes, too. Yeah, or in the little underpass thing.
But, you know, the thing that I have been really feeling for a long time, and we've sort of talked about it here and there on the podcast, is that I started my professional drag career over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. I had hosted the Glamazon at the Cafe for 7 years. And when I first started that show, we were only one of two drag shows in the entire Castro.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like once a week on different nights, there was a drag show. Well, you guys, at this point, there is a drag show in the Castro almost every single night of the week. And some nights of the week, multiples in one, you know, going like,
yeah, probably.
I mean, so Mondays they had drag at the Cafe for a long time. Then they moved it to Fridays, and then there was me on Sundays. They have a drag queen hosting and doing little pop-up performances on Saturdays.
I don't think I even understand what's going on over at the Cafe anymore, to be honest. But I know they have something like on Fridays,
yes,
some Saturdays, and I'm not really sure I understand the gig on Sundays anymore.
I don't. It's none of my business anymore, but...
And then there's the gig across the street, Aju's gig, that's on Sundays.
Aju has her Big Top show produced by Joshua J.
And on Saturdays, they usually always have a fundraiser during the day.
So some kind of drag.
Yeah, and then...
And then Carney hosts My So-Called Night on Thursdays, which is her, doing pop-up stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the Lookout, they have drag shows on random Thursdays. They have Carney's show on Saturday, her brunch show. Thursdays is the Monster Show at the Edge. I mean, there is just, BB's Sweetbriars and drag on some nights over at Midnight. Girl, there is drag everywhere.
There's the two over at Q Bar. It's not a drag show, but they have two drag queens hosting the party on Sundays
and
at Q Bar.
And Dick at Night, which is Grace Towers' event on Wednesdays at Moby Dick, which I just did a couple weeks ago. So my point being that in the queer community, you cannot fucking...
You can't throw a stone, girl.
Girl, you can't swing a nappy wig without hitting a drag show.
That's the truth.
And the unfortunate part of that is Like, it's great that we have, you know, increased exposure over 7 years ago when, you know, there was only a couple of opportunities. But the fact of the matter is now that I think local gays are so tired of seeing the same, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, you guys, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. For most of us drag performers, if we have the opportunity, we will do the same damn drag performance at every venue. You know what I mean? Like, did you do different stuff at every single place you went on Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was for different, but that was, yeah, I did.
No, you did the same thing.
No, I did different
No, you did different it. Stuff. Okay, well, that's very unusual because most of the time, most of us have like maybe 5 to 7 songs that we do on a regular basis. You have costumes that go with each of those. You have a little performance or shtick that goes with it. And after a while, it gets like, you know, you start to think, I just saw this shit. Mm-hmm. I saw this girl doing this shit, like, 2 weeks ago, at minimum, so...
Yeah.
And I really wanted to do something a little different. So, thankfully, because of the Portland Neighborhood Association bringing me in to do drag bingo a couple weeks ago at El Toro, which was a maze. Actually, that was just last week. It was amazing. Thank you to my daughter, Anna Lee, for stopping by, and all of the little people who... My friend Beth Spotswood came out to play bingo with us. It was a great time, and it just showed that there is, like, real interest from this, I wouldn't say straight crowd, but a mixed crowd, you know, some mm-hmm. gay. It was probably 70% straight and 30% gay. And I think that that is, for me, where I would like to go in the future.
Well, speaking of the future, you guys remember not too long ago, I was going on this audition at HSF.
Uh-huh.
Well, they called me last night, uh-huh. and they it sounds like they're offering me a position. Yeah.
Congratulations, Pearl!
I'm so juiced. So,
Yeah, she sounds so juiced. She's like, I'm so juiced.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm not...
Y'all, well. Pearl has had the emotional equivalent of Botox. Her emotions cannot fluctuate. Jesus. Pearl has had emotional Botox. She's like... I'm so juiced, you guys.
I'm so excited.
Oh, my God.
But
she lives!
You know. So, they have... the owner contacted me, and he said, you know what? I can play the voicemail.
Yes, girl. Pull it up. While she's pulling this up, you guys need to remember that, for Pearl, this was, like, sort of her big dream. Like, to get in at HSF.
I wouldn't say it wasn't my dream, but I really did want it because I heard the money is good,
It was like one of your performance dreams.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's nothing wrong with having a performance dream. Like, whether that's to,
I definitely want more than that. Like, I don't want you guys to think, okay, that's cute.
No, but girl, there is nothing wrong with setting, like, okay, how about this? It was one of her major career goals locally.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay. Better?
Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, that looks grand.
Meanwhile, my neighbor came in and Pearl saw like some Chinese takeout boxes. She's like, ooh, that looks grand.
Right. Okay.
So
here's the voicemail that they left me.
Yes, hi. This is Aaron Nilsson. I'm one of the owners over at Asia South Restaurant. We met, I don't know, a month or two ago back when you did an audition here. And I was calling just to speak with you about your availability and bringing you in to start work over here potentially with us. I'm actually going to be out of town for the next couple of days, or something, maybe to catch you tonight. But I'm going to have Luis Guarciolo, who are the two managers here, give you a call to follow up this week. I just wanted to call you first.
So hopefully by next week.
I was going to say, bitch, she made it sound like it was, like, tentative. He literally said, we want to bring you in and, like, have you start doing some shit.
Yeah, but girl, I don't believe anything until I see the paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Girl, and even, once again, the bitch has got emotional Botox. She's like, until I walk off the stage, it didn't really happen.
You're right.
What the fuck?
Yeah, trust me, I want to be excited, but, you know, we'll see.
Right, well, that is phenomenal. For those who are outside of the Bay Area, you may have seen the inner workings of Asia SF on the Fuse Network TV show Transcendent, which focuses, it's a reality TV show that focuses, or what do they call it, a docu-series?
Mm-hmm.
The first season was more docu-series. The second season was more reality TV. It was about a lot of drama and bitchy.
And I think that's, you know, partly why, I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and assume, never mind.
That could have led to some openings in the cast because some people were like, I'm out of here. But anyway, it's a very nice establishment. It's a legendary establishment in the Bay Area for sure. and it's a tourist destination. It's a destination location for people who want to come and experience something that is uniquely San Francisco, more or less. All of the people who work there are trans.
All of the people who perform there are trans. Definitely not all the people who work there.
Okay, well, let me take that back. When I said work there, I meant in the show. So
in the show, yes.
Yes, so that's most what
the,
I meant.
Most of the bartenders, I think, are cis men, and the owners are cis men, and the girls don't even serve you food. The girls just serve you cocktails and perform and host.
Right. So, well, hold on.
One moment.
All right, we're back. When my neighbor brought out that Chinese takeout, they got Pearl actually significantly more excited than this job offer at Asia.
That's not true.
She's like, that looks grand. But anyway, my neighbor was in the backyard and it set off the boys because my upstairs neighbor, I can't believe it, she's 18 now.
She looks 12.
Well, right, but she just graduated high school. She is, and I've actually known her since she was 6 or 7.
Oh my goodness.
And she came to live here.
Poor baby.
Well, she came to live here when her mother passed away, so it is of a poor baby situation. Her mother passed away when she was very young, and her brother, this is such a convoluted story, but I almost went on a date with her brother. I was supposed to actually, you guys.
Oh my God.
Wait, this is years and years ago before I knew that they were, whatever. In full disclosure, he and I were going to hook up, but he got stoned and passed out and left me standing outside his door, banging on his door in the rain. And then
I
7 years later, he shows up at my open house Christmas thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, because they brought him down and I was like, you look remarkably familiar to me. And I knew exactly where I knew him from. I was like,
Hold on, I'll take grudges from the past. Girl.
Well, I wasn't holding on to grudges. Bitch, it was fucking cold. And he left me in the rain. And I was like, then I was headed home. And he's like, come back. Like, I woke up. I was like, fuck that.
I heard that, girl.
Like, boo.
Fuck that.
I was like, girl, I'm soaking wet right now. Like, after having to fucking wait in the rain. Anyway, the point being that I've known her, like, her whole life. Is so weird watching a child grow up in front of you. You know what I mean? And the boys, my boys love her because she's
been here longer than them.
Well, yes, but she also walks them. Like, she comes and takes them for walks, and I, like, help pay her cell phone bill and shit.
Oh, well, that's cute.
Yeah, it's like a nice little trade agreement. Anyway, so, well, congratulations, Pearl, on achieving one of your performances.
I'll let you guys know it's 100% legit after I talk to them and get up in there.
Well, I mean, I think that, generally speaking, when somebody calls and does all of that, I mean, that was like a 16-minute phone message, girl. You guys, at the end of it, I wanted to say, well, that's all the time we have this week. So, well, it is great. I know at one point she did sound excited about it. And
no, I'm still very excited about it. It's just, I'll say this. I have a friend who is staying with me for a little bit, and she, we auditioned together, and she was called for a job position there a while ago.
Okay.
And while working there, now my best friend is a former worker of Asia. So
She used to work at Asia SF?
She used to be one of the only girls that sang there.
Oh, okay. Sing live?
She sings live, yeah.
Ooh, maybe, is she good?
She is amazing.
Well then, as soon as this thing kicks off in El Toro, I'll be calling you because I'm going to be looking for live vocalists and stuff.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I would hear about, like, what it's like to work there. And my friend, Tiny, she tells me about, like, some of the horror stories about, like cis women and stuff, like, coming up to her and asking her if she has a dick, just flat out. You know, and it's just, you know, it's something that comes with a job, but it's something that I'm going to have to mentally be prepared to deal with whenever I'm there.
Right. I mean, it's very interesting because, you know, like, while I'm not in any way, shape, or form condoning that kind of behavior, because I just think that that's fucking tacky no matter what, but there is an element of the way it's marketed as, like, the only trans, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's all, what it makes me think of just a teeny tiny bit is, like, when they advertise, like, they've got pandas at the zoo, like a panda exhibit. People go there to see that.
Right, yeah.
And then they become, and they go there, and they're curious about the pandas, so they want to ask questions or whatever.
Yeah.
So their marketing is like, these are transgender women. And then they come and see, and many of the women are like, wildly passable and whatever. So it's increases the already high level of curiosity that people have about trans community and whatever. And so, and it's unfortunate that that's the fucking thing that they want to know.
Yeah.
Do you have a dick?
Right. I think if someone does that to me, I'm going to assume that they're flirting. I'm like, oh, so you want to know.
Yeah, well, you guys know Pearl's philosophy. The only reason you need to know what's in the pants is if you're getting in the pants.
Right.
So, but I will tell you, like, I suppose it's different because you're getting paid to be there and be on display and whatever. Right. But it also makes me think about how there are tour buses that will take crowds of straight people through the Castro. And I just imagine, like, the bus driver being like, if you look to your right, you see the homosexual in its natural habitat. You know, like,
that's right.
I mean,
right.
And it's like, you know, they like come through there and they're like taking pictures like, ew, look, gays.
Right.
Like, oh my God, wait till they see this in Des Moines. Right. They're never going to believe that we were actually here.
Oh my God, I'm not Des Moines.
Like, Sioux Falls has never seen anything like this.
Right, right.
I mean, it's like, it's so fucking awkward. You're like, they come by and they're like, hey gays. Right. What, you're like, bitch, please.
But I mean, other
you got
than
to
that,
go, ho.
It is. They do. It is a privilege.
At least, girl. At least you're collecting a paycheck when that happens.
True. Yeah, and you know, it's. I think it's such a privilege and honor to be working alongside those beautiful girls. You know, and to be seen as one of them. You know what I mean?
Right. And I definitely think that in terms of the auditioning process and being accepted into that, this show in particular at Asia SF has among the highest standards in the city by far.
Right.
So there is something, you know, the only other place that I can think of that would have the level of auditioning process and standards is Harry Denton's Starlight Room,
definitely.
So, you know, I think that that's incredible. I congratulate you and I applaud you because I know that it was important to you.
Yeah, no, it still is. It still is. And
it was important to her.
We'll see how it goes. I'm excited to get the ball rolling.
Okay, speaking of the fact that I was teasing Pearl about having Botoxed emotions.
It's true, girl.
Does my forehead look better?
Dude, you did not get Botox. Did you really?
I totally did. 100% went and got Botox.
I'm so proud of you.
So,
good for you.
As it turns out, we talked about our good girlfriend, Sasha Soprano, a couple episodes ago, or maybe even last episode, and Sasha's sister, Jeanette, works, it's not Jeanette Soprano, she has a real last name, y'all. But, like, Sasha's biological sister, Jeanette, works at a new place in the Castro. There is a new place that offers Botox and laser hair removal and, cool sculpting. Remember, I had some cool sculpting a while back, you guys. And it's called Laser Away.
Okay.
Like LA Salon. LA Salon, Laser Away Salon. And it's located right in the Castro, directly across from the Castro Theater, right next to Soul Cycle.
And how did you come to the conclusion that you wanted to get Botox?
Well, I'd had Botox in the past.
That's new.
Like, I'd had Botox only one time. I'd had Botox and I'd had cheek filler. Like, but it was like maybe seven years ago.
Uh-huh.
I think it was the very first season that we did the Glamazon, the first year we did it.
Okay.
So, of course, you guys, Botox and fillers, unless they're silicone fillers, which are not advisable necessarily, I tried it because all of it is not irreparable damage. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even if I disliked it, the Botox, like, does take some time to wear off. But anyway, I did it, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a while to, like, get back around to doing it. And what had drove me to consider it is that I had a line forming across my forehead.
That's the only reason I think I would get Botox also.
I've had, when I'm getting in drag in specific, I don't mind it as a guy. I don't, like, it's very interesting dynamic because I feel both sides of the gender bias almost in this situation, because as a guy, I think that lines make your face look interesting, or I don't want to say weathered, but, you know, like a little bit of aging on men is seen as sexy and attractive and whatever. On women, you don't like it so much. So, I mean, society tells you that it's wrong and all this stuff. Well, for me, as a guy, I've never minded any of the lines, wrinkles, changes in my face. Never really much so at all. In drag, when I started to put on the makeup, I started getting a crease across my forehead, and it was making me batshit. Because one of the things that you guys who follow me on social media know is that I don't really love filtering my photos. We have friends who filter their fucking photos until the point that they look like animation.
Right.
I don't want to do that. I don't like to filter my photos. But there was getting to be this line, no matter how gorgeous, like, the rest of my face was looking or whatever, there was getting to be this line across my forehead, and I was like, you know what? If you have to start feeling compelled to filter your photos to get rid of this line, like, maybe it's time to do something. So when Sasha was telling me about Laser Away in the Castro and that her sister worked there, I was like, maybe you should put us in contact. So I went in on Monday, and it's very interesting. For those of you who have never had Botox, I'll kind of give you the inside details on it. So the first thing that they ask you is, do you want complete paralysis? Meaning, do you want the muscles completely paralyzed so they don't really move at all? Or do you just want it to be relaxed? Well, as a drag performer, I don't want complete paralysis in my, in like my forehead, because I need some expression.
Draw out of mine, go and get rid of it.
Well, right, but I mean, but complete paralysis means that, like, you know, it's that face that you see where, like, there's no expression at all. Yeah, and, like, sort of, girl, no.
I live, girl.
No. I said to them, I mean, I made a few jokes about that, but I said, can we go somewhere in the middle between just relaxed and paralysis? Like, give me, like, so, and then the thing about Botox is that they find, they'll ask you to, like, shift your face. They'll make you do expressions, and then they see the areas where things wrinkle up or whatever, and that's where they will treat specifically. So they pumped a lot of Botox into my face. Like, I can't imagine how many cc's they'd have been putting in there if there was complete paralysis.
I love it.
Because I got about 50 cc's, which is pretty significant.
Oh, my God.
So each space would be, like, I think 4 or 6. And so that you, they did many places. But it, the interesting thing about it, and the first time I got Botox, the woman said to me, just so you know, don't get alarmed, because they inject you with this tiny little needle. To be very specific about where they put it. And she said, don't be alarmed if you hear, like, a crunching sound that sounds like a bug.
Fuck no.
Well, it's just because it's breaking through a, like, you know, a layer
your
of
skull?
Skin. No, girl. Somebody fucking broke through this bitch's skull and Botox the fuck out of it a while back, apparently. No, it's just breaking through layers of skin because they have to do it.
And there's a crunch.
Yeah, there's a crunch.
Why is there a crunch?
Because it's, the skin is taut. Like, the muscle, it's going through a muscle. It's like, it just sounds like a, it's, she said, it sounds like a, this lady was Middle Eastern a long time ago. She was like, it sounded
Middle
like
Eastern a long time ago. What do you mean
ago? The one who did my Botox a long time ago was Middle Eastern.
Got it.
And she was like, a lot, but she's different now. She's had so much Botox, she's something different now. No, a lady a long time ago who happened to be Middle Eastern, and she said it with a cute little accent, said, it sounds like when you crunch a cockroach, like that.
Ew.
But it just, you can't, it freaks some people out, so they have to, like, notify you. Like, just so you know, this is normal. Other stuff by somebody's like, oh, you poked my brain or whatever, you know, like, Pearl would fucking think that.
I would be the one that simply flip out.
It was, girl, the lady was like, I hope this isn't too uncomfortable. And I was like, if you didn't make me keep making facial expressions, I would have fallen asleep during this process.
I,
like,
so
I
didn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt at all. And then at Laser Away,
expensive?
At Laser Away, it depends on how many CCs you get. You pay by the CC, the amount,
okay,
the Botox. So, and I don't know the average. I think it's like something like $10 to $15 a unit. So maybe slightly more if you go to someplace upscale. Maybe slightly less if you go someplace lower, whatever. But it's a fair amount of it's. But the thing is, it is an, it's a fairly good investment. It does have to be redone in probably like maybe 3 to 6 months. Maybe by 6 months, it's usually gone. But I think that the thing with procedures like this, like, you have to start in advance of it. Like, when you see the lines starting to form, it's probably better to start getting, like, a little bit of stuff done. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to be one of those people. I don't want to be one of those people, rather. I'm not going to... I can't say what anybody... I don't want to be one of those people who waits until, like, there's a lot of noticeable issues and then goes in one day and gets so much shit done that they come out looking like a different person.
Right.
I don't want that. I would much rather, for example, that I notice that this crease is happening. I'm looking at it now. Like, it's this line right here. Mm-hmm. But even after what I had done, it's, like, noticeably decreased. Mm-hmm. So it's relaxed and it'll be...
Girl, hormones did that for me.
Right. I can I can see that. But I would rather get a crease on my face than breasts. So...
I don't know, girl.
I mean, no. I mean, then again, some of the trade this bitch be pulling, I, like, might want the boobs.
You might.
I'd be like, don't mind the creases on my face. They're going away soon as these boobs are forming, too.
Right.
But I prefer to get my breasts the old-fashioned way. KFC and ice cream, bitch. Okay, I got some moves. Anyway, Laser Way and the Castro treated me really well. Jeanette is there. She, like, if you guys...
Are you going to go in for another treatment?
I do want another treatment. I might actually talk to them about the possibility of getting my upper lip slightly
plumped. Through. Oh, she's going to get fillers in her lips. Are going to be just a few surgeries away from being a woman.
Bitch. No. I do want to talk about the possibility of giving my upper lip a little plump and a little extra symmetry because my mouth is asymmetrical.
If you do that, you might just want to add a little bit on the bottom, too. Just a tiny bit.
Maybe. I wouldn't mind it. And then I want to discuss the possibility of getting a little filler in my cheeks again. When I will tell you guys, filler is much more expensive as a process than Botox. But...
And it also goes away.
It does.
Like, it's nearly as permanent as Botox is.
Filler starts to... I noticed it started to dissipate within 90 days. Like, by 6 months, it was whatever. But the filler that I had in my cheeks... because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. As I've been aging, like, when I lose a little bit of weight, it comes off my face first.
That's the worst.
And I just... I don't like that as a guy or a girl. Mm-hmm. So, it's one of those things where that, I felt... noticeably transformed me more than the Botox did back. Mm-hmm. And this is, I had it done when I was 37, I think. So 7 years ago.
Okay.
And it just made me feel younger, and I do not want to become one of those people. And I'm very cautious about this, you guys, because I do have my mom begged me when I was going to go on Botched. Uh-huh. When they called me about Botched, she begged me not to go. And she said, you got an addictive personality. I think that she expected me to come out of there looking like Jocelyn Wildenstein or like fucking the cat lady with full-on tits or whatever. Because I told her, I was like, if they offer... I freaked my mom. I was like, if they offered me breasts. And I was like, no! She was like, no! What are you talking about? And I was like, I'm just kidding, Mom. I'm like... I don't want boobs, but I did tell her that if they'd offered me hips, I would have, like, gotten a little bit of clumping on my ass, for sure.
I definitely want hips.
So, anyways, you guys, we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're way behind already schedule. We're supposed to have Natalie Ray with us, so stay tuned. There's much more coming on this Party Foul Radio. We've got Kirsten from Pentatonix, as well as Natalie Ray, right after this. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop. Located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Go visit Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop to get your hair done for the summer. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. And we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
And we have on the line with us, straight from Russia with love, Miss Natalie Ray.
Hi, everybody.
So, Natalie, we are so excited that you are willing to join us to talk a little bit about your experience. We told them a couple episodes ago about your presentation at Sister Roma's fundraiser for Chechnya and how you shared some of your experience there. What was it like? What is it like seeing the continuation of the persecution of people from your home country in the news even now?
Well, the first thing what is thank you so much for having me. It's a really exciting thing for me that you call me, and I'm going to be a part of your weekly show. But for me, I will not lie to you. I knew when I was leaving Russia, I knew it's never going to change, because that's what was happening for so many years. And now when I'm seeing that, it's, of course, it's like breaks my heart every time, but that's how it goes there. So it will never change.
But you know what? Like, people, like, especially the LGBT community here understands that, you know, things, it may not seem like they're going to change, but things do change.
But the thing is, that's what I even told when I was speaking in Castro Theater for this fundraiser. What you have in America, you have a freedom that you can go together, you can have a community that can bear their hands together and work through the dark times and try to come up with some ideas and something new that can work out, and things is going to change. In Russia, it's totally different culture. You cannot go out loud. You cannot speak about stuff because you will just get arrested, or you just get killed or beat up to death. That's the thing what I think people in America, in San Francisco, in any city, that you need to understand. You have a community. You have a way to stop that. You have a way to change stuff.
Yeah, I remember you saying at the Castro Theater, I don't remember it verbatim or where you said the quote was from, but it was a famous quote from Russia that said, it was a philosopher who said, if you woke me up in 200 years from now and said, what is it like in Russia, I would say, do you remember what I'm talking about?
It's Lev Tolstoy. He was a famous Russian writer. He wrote, if I will die tomorrow and you will walk me up 200 years after and ask me what's happening in Russia, I will tell you they steal and they drink. And Yeah, some people was laughing because they didn't understand the quote, because the quote was meaning of that nothing change.
Right.
Nothing goes in a better place, because it's just continuously people unhappy and continuously people steal stuff from each other and people drink to try to forget themselves from what's happening around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understood exactly. I mean, I think that I may have laughed because of the fact that it sounds kind of trite. It sounds a little absurd, but I did fully understand what you meant. Is it's just like a constant cycle of the same thing happening over and over again. And it seems like even when there have been social advances in Russia, that they haven't, basically it's just trading one kind of dictatorship for another. It's not really doing that much to advance things. It's just who it is that's leading your party there.
Well, yeah, and even with the leading of the party, our president, not my president, the president of Russia, he's a really smart guy. He knows how to manipulate people. That's why I think your president was speaking with him for about 3 hours last time, because our president really knows how to manipulate people. He really knows how to use a religion. He know how to use the hate through the people so they can hate the small, like a small communities, like a gay communities or a Jewish communities or communities of the immigrants. And it's kind of blurred up the page of what's really happening in the country, what really is going on with the money that the country is poor. Because when I was growing up, when I was a young kid, in the school, they were telling us these huge stories about that we won the Second World War, we beat the Nazis, we're the biggest country in the world, we're the prettiest country in the world, and we would watch all these pictures, and I would always say, like, oh, I live in a beautiful country, the most best country in the world. And when you're hitting this age, when you are start traveling and see your country, you start reading more and you start understanding how your parents live, how like your grandma lives, that they pay her $100 a month her retirement after when she worked for over 45, 50 years, and they're paying her $100 a month, and she's supposed to live from this $100, the utilities and everything, and how people, there is corruption everywhere, and the people unhappy, and all these pictures is all false.
Right.
And that's kind of when hitting you, you're like, oh, well, that's not what I was taught to. Mm-hmm. What I was thinking about this country.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Natalie, but that happens in this country too. Yeah. where people rewrite history to be what you want it to be.
Christopher Columbus, girl.
I mean,
thievery.
But I mean, it's everything. You know what, yeah, I mean? Like,
it's a lot. Yeah,
I remember growing up. Taking Texas history, for example.
Texas history?
Because I lived in Texas at the time.
So they made you take a Texas history?
You have to take Texas history.
Huh. And,
well, honey, Texas is a thing unto itself, because Texas really believes it should be its own country.
Maybe it should.
But, they'll tell you about how evil, like, there was sections about how evil Mexicans were, because, you know, we had to fight to, like, get this. And the reality was, we were stealing what was theirs, you know what I mean? And but it's very whitewashed. But I do think that I think that your country may, Natalie, have taken it to an all new level, you know what I mean? I think that,
right,
but I don't think it's exclusive to your country.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think I understand what you're saying, but in the end of the day, even right now, when I'm looking at the stuff, like, you can fight back when the stuff happens.
Yeah.
Again, coming back to the thing, you can fight back. Like, Nazis try to come here, let's go and spank all of them, every single of them, like, yeah, that kind of stuff. You're trying to fight back. In Russia, it's impossible. Like, it's never happens.
Mm-hmm. Right. I definitely think that Russia as a country is more internally militarized than the United States, for sure. I think that because our country is based on the idea of many different ideas being permissible, maybe not acceptable, but everybody's allowed to have a different opinion. There are countries like throughout Africa, many places in Asia, certainly in Russia, where you either think what the government tells you to think, or you are in serious, potentially deadly trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, we shared a little bit of your story on the podcast a while ago, things that we saw on the televised report on drag performances in Russia that you participated in. But tell, you know, the listeners a little bit about what it was like as a drag performer in Russia, in the club that you had there.
Well, I started performing when I was 18, as me and my sister, Poya met my sister. We went to the theater school together, and after the theater school, I went to the drag. I started doing that. As a lot of people right now, they started doing drug because of the drug race or whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
I started doing drug not because it was cool, because it was famous, because it's on TV. I started doing drug because that's what I liked. I liked because they were teaching us to do that in the theater school, to dual gender, to show the another gender, because it was a part of the school, part of the teaching. And I started in the small club, and some of the people, they would like, yeah, I can see you're doing something. Yeah, you're good. Come over, try to this club. And it was jumping from one club to another club. And then they invite me to the best club in Russia, the most popular club in Russia that always had a bunch of people. And you saw that in a lot of people who's listening to podcasts, they can come over, they can go on the ABC Night Lifetime and see the story about the Russian drag queen. It was not the clubs like here, it's just behind the black door that you're knocking on the door and they're searching you. And when I was starting, it was amazing. Like, I was living my dream. I will not lie to you, I never thought to move to the States. It never was in my thoughts. I thought I'm going to perform, and I'm going to build a career there and just see how it goes. But I think 4 months in, when I was working there, they passed a law about the non-traditional relationship, and the shit hit the fan. People started attacking the club. They would start waiting for you outside the club. I always telling this story about I never had the money, and so I was saving the money for the shoes, the rhinestone shoes. And one time I saved the money, I bought the shoes, and I wore them once, and when I was leaving the club to go to another club, because we would perform in the different places, and sometimes there was three guys with the baseball bats, and they started running after us, so I was need to dust the shoes and run for my life.
Not the shoes, girl.
Yeah, yeah, I never saw the shoes again. But, like, right now when I'm talking, that was the another thing when Sister Roma asked me, I was like, right now when I'm talking about that, like, I'm laughing, and it's like I'm talking about some person in the book.
Right.
But that was my life. That was the survivor of every day. Like, you go in there and you try to make people happy by performing, and whatever happened after that, it's just whatever happened. You need to just go with it and try to live your best out of life. And a lot of people who is my friends who are still there, that's what they do. They still survive every single day.
What is that like, having friends out there that don't necessarily like being there?
I mean, you also know that they live in significant danger of being killed every day.
Well, yeah, like, you never use an internet for meeting somebody. You would never meet the person on the internet there, because you'll get killed, hold it up to death. Or what they would do, they will film you, they will humiliate you in front of the camera and then post it in YouTube or send that to your friends and mom and whatever. You dress up differently, you walk differently, you talk differently. Like, it just, everything is different. It's all like, that's a lot of, that's why people ask me, people telling me like, oh, you're a really good actor. Well, I was doing that since I was in the first grade.
Yeah.
Pretending that I'm somebody else and trying to convince people that I'm not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, that is something that I think that we, in America, the LGBTQ community does that to a degree, but I think that
it's nowhere near
that degree. And yeah. I think that for us, you know, once we get to be 18 or whatever, we get the fucking hell out of where we started, because survival is easier somewhere else. But in Russia, there's just nowhere to go. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
about my story, I always telling like it was a destiny, because I was 18 years old with the clear passport. I never flew anywhere. I never see anything. To go to United States Embassy and get a visa, just a tourist visa to see the country, it's impossible. They would never do that. And every single time when I'm praying, I'm always praying to this woman who was a United States worker in the embassy, and she looked at me and she was like, okay, I see, okay, I understand. And she gave me it was so many people who tried. It was a big company of us who tried to get the visa, and it was only me who got the visa from 20, which has, we were trying to get a trip as a friend. Mm-hmm. But every time I'm just saying, like, I think it's a destiny. Like, I think that's what is supposed to be happening. And it's really hard to even, like, think to get to America.
What?
Just how it went.
Natalie, what was the breaking point that made you decide it was time to leave Russia for you?
Shooting.
Right.
Everybody was talking about that, and it was a huge drown in our community. And for me, it was a huge heartbreaker because I had the same experience when I was back then. Because even if you will see in the podcast, they would show the bullet holes in the door. So what happened, it was I think the attacks was going on for maybe 2 months, and we came up to the club as usual. We was about to start doing our makeup, we shaved, you know, like kiki, like a usual day, preparing for having a show, and then we heard the gunshots. It was 2 gunshots, and we looked at each other, and we had a back door in the club that we can get out to. We heard the gunshots, we looked at each other, and the first thing what we said, grab as many costumes as you can, because what a drag queen without the costumes and the wigs. I'm in! Right. And all of our costumes, all of our makeup, everything, all of the supplies, they would be stocked in the club because we couldn't take them home because we would live with our families. Like, I can't bring the dresses and 14 size shoes and the wigs to my house.
And we grabbed
they'd have been like, Natalie, you must be dating a really large woman.
Right.
I know. Yeah. We grabbed the suitcases with the costumes and with the wigs and everything like that. So it was like 3 of us, and we had the bags on us, and we had the suitcases drawing. We get out to the back door, and we start running out, and I remember it was snowing, and the suitcases was so heavy because there was so much stuff in them, and we would drown them into the snow. We were trying to, like, get out of the club and, like, go far away as much as we can, and I was just drowned, and I remember I started crying, and I was like, this is bullshit. Like, I cannot live like that. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, come on, girl, we need to, like, oh, we'll get a car, but we'll go to another club. We'll drop our stuff in another club. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to work here anymore. I'm done. And that was the point when I was like, fuck that. The next day I called my sister and was like, you know what, I think I'm gonna leave. And she was like, yeah, I think it's a good idea. So I did one last performance there. I remember this was a Wednesday, and then was the reporter who was shooting the video about this club. And a week after I bought the ticket, I had only one suitcase because the paint for another one was really expensive. So I packed as many costumes, as many wigs, as many everything what I could. I had only, as Spoiler said last time, I had a bag of costumes, only boy clothes on me, $600 in my pocket, and the fake tits, and I came to San Francisco.
Wow.
Oh my God. So what was it like just showing up here? You didn't know anybody at all.
Yeah, it was exciting. I don't know why, but I was 18. I didn't speak English. It was so exciting from one side. And I found the roommate in the first day in San Francisco.
How in the hell did you do that not speaking English, girl?
Oh, girl, I was really talented.
Oh, you're a hoe! You're a hoe!
No. It's illegal in San Francisco. I'm just kidding.
For the listeners, out of drag, Natalie's fairly attractive.
Natalie was Natalie, mail order bride, girl.
Natalie's very cute boy, and in this city, I'm sure, she 18, said, fresh out of the fucking Russia.
Real quick.
And, like, in dire need, makes a
whoever
a good
can dive
story.
In, offer me a house.
Single, no husband.
Oh, Lord.
Well,
so
do what you gotta do.
what was it like, though? I mean, like, you met roommates your very first night here, basically, and they invited you in.
Yeah, and I don't know how it just worked out. I didn't speak any English. I started living in San Francisco. It was just going, like, I started learning the language, I had the full, like, I didn't speak Russian with anybody, I was just speaking English with the roommates, I watched a bunch of TV, I read the books without understanding what I'm reading about, and it was just going, and again, it was a community of San Francisco that helped me to even start, like, the first show, I think it was yours. It was Pollo Del Mar show that my roommate brought me to, and they introduced me to you. And I did your show first, and then I remember you referred me to Rest Her Soul in Peace. It was Cookie Dough, and Cookie Dough grabbed me. And it was just going from one queen to another. The Cookie Dough invited me to her show, and I did her show. She liked me. She booked me again. And then Honey Mahogany was at the Cookie Dough shows. She was like, oh, you're really pretty. You should do my show. And I did her show. She liked me. And it was just going to. And then I bumped to the bunch of fundraisers. I was fundraiser money for anything, anyone. Just to get to people to know my story, to know me, because that was the only way to get to know people and to start something new. And it just was, I don't know, it was going on. And the only thing what I was doing is working hard. Like, you work hard and you just go with the flow.
Yeah. So do you think San Francisco is going to be home for you, or do you have your eyes elsewhere?
Well, San Francisco will always be my heart. It's always, it's a city that I fell in love with right away, and I never ever thought another place. Like, you know, like people like, oh, you're home because you're from Russia. Like, your home is Moscow. No, it's my family's home. I grew up there, but I'm not referring to that as home. Even when I'm telling people, oh, I'm always saying, like, I went to visit my family.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I never would say, I went home. Mm-hmm. It's not my house. It's not my home. But I have the idea. I'm moving to L.A. because it's better for me from the job and the career perspective. So I'm doing that in the close future. But San Francisco, it's my heart. It's my home.
Wow. Yeah. She's going to LA to angle to get on Drag Race. They've had all these fake Russians on there. Now the bitch wants to be a real Russian on there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, when we were talking about your story the last time, I just had no, you know, when we first met that night, and I, you know, Pearl and I both remember, like, yeah. You know, we were backstage, and you were wearing your pink tutu dress,
uh-huh.
And you were pretty, and these boys were like, this is my roommate, she's from Russia, she wants to do shows, and, you know, I'm glad that at the time I didn't know any of your story, because I think that when you know somebody's story and it's sad or depressing or heartbreaking or whatever, it can force you to do things, you know, you do it for the wrong reason. And I'm really glad that when I met you, it was just because I felt like you were a fit, you know what I mean? And I'm really grateful that, you know, that very first night we met, I was like, you know, you're part of the family now, girl, you're in, right. This is, you're with us, you're us now. So
yeah, but another thing for me, what was really interesting, because I was talking about that with the sister Roma, because at first when she asked me, I'm like, no, I'm not going to speak. I don't think it's a good idea. It's really nice that you're doing that, but I don't think it's a good idea for me to go to speak on this fundraiser and everything like that. Because when I moved here, I was really ashamed because I was an immigrant and I came from that kind of country, and it was a shameful time. I don't know why, and a lot of people would ask me, like, why are you being ashamed? Like, it's your story, that's your life, that's how it goes. But for me, it was a shameful time. It was a shameful thing that I was forced to leave my country. I was forced to escape because of who I am. That's why even when I met you and when I was, like, introduced to other girls and everything like that, I would never speak about my story. I would never tell. I would be like, yeah, I'm Russian. Don't really speak English. So let's have fun.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do...
Well, now her your perspective is a little different.
Yeah, I mean, don't you see that now, at least, that sharing your story and telling people of all these tremendous obstacles that you had to face and overcome inspires people? Like, yeah, you know, whether they have any understanding of what it's actually like to be in that scenario itself or otherwise, like, when I hear these tired-ass bitches talking about, oh, it's so hard to do this or so hard to do that, or, like, the San Francisco drag scene is clicky and you can't break into it, I just want to be like, you should go talk to Natalie and like, hear what it's really like to fucking have some obstacles, bitch, you know?
Well, because now every drag queen and now, like, with the RuPaul Drag Race, everybody, like, I'm not saying anything bad about that, but people starting drag, they will do my wig, they will learn how to do makeup, or they will pay somebody to do their makeup, and they want to come over and get paid. They want to come over, have fun, go on stage, lip sync to some song, could get paid.
Right.
See, that's the perspective of all, and they're like, oh, it's so hard, like, you can't get anywhere. I'm like, well, you need to work hard. You need to understand if you really want to do it. If you want to do it for a kiki and just go to the bar and have fun, just do it. Go and get fun. But a lot of people, they start, like, mowing, or they almost start pretend, or, and if you're trying to teach them, if you're trying to tell them, that, yeah, it will be hard. Yeah, you will need to work on it. You will need to work on this or that. They always think you're a bitch.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
you know how many times people would confirm me that I'm a bitch?
Well.
Oh, my God.
Well.
Let's start with Pearl at first. Oh, you know, my God.
Whatever.
Even, like, I will not lie to you, even a week ago, people were, it was two drag queens who confirmed me and told me, like, oh, yeah, where are your friends? We're just seeing you, like, as a friend. Like, yeah, you're a little cunty when you're in drag, you know? Like, you're not nice when you're in drag.
Right. There are plenty of people like that.
And I was sitting there, I was like, oh, really? Like, I'm not in drag. Both of you in drag, and you confirming me and doing the witch hunting. I'm like, okay, sure. Like, why am I a bad person?
Right.
And you're trying to, like, you look at them and you're like, I've been through stuff. It's my job. I enjoy what I'm doing. And if sometimes I'm not in the mood to kiki and have fun, it doesn't mean that I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
You're also, Natalie, you're also, like, quite professional about the way you conduct yourself. You, mm-hmm. like, you take it, see, I mean, it's, the thing is that it's obvious having, when you work with you, that you recognize that this is not something you take for granted. Like, too many of these bitches are like,
right.
Like, I bought a wig, I put on some makeup, and, like, you know, make me a star. It's like,
right.
Bitch, who the fuck, have several seats for, because who are you? Like, yeah. You recognize that this is something that you've had to fight for. Like, you had to leave your fucking home country and go somewhere else just to be able to do this without, like, getting killed. Some of these bitches need to have a seat.
So some people, they don't recognize that, and for them, I come over as a mean person or a cunty or whatever. And from my perspective, I'm like, it's never hurt my feeling because the thing is about me, the only people who can hurt my feeling is my family. What people thinking outside of the box about me, I don't really care because people will think about stuff about you every time.
Yeah.
But just how easy sometimes for people to just, like, get their opinion, and people get hurt, that's another thing in here. Like, people get hurt, people get offended all the time. And just, mm-hmm. like, calm your tits down. A man in a wig. We're just going on stage, lip-syncing to somebody's songs, and trying to make people a little bit happier. And that's the only thing, what, in my perspective, what I'm doing. I'm trying to go on stage, I'm trying to listen to the song and make the people who's in the audience a little bit happier and make some money with it.
So Natalie and I work together on Sunday Night Listeners, and she was telling me, well, all of us in the dressing room, that the first time that she had been booked in one of the shows, the person put on Facebook, and being joined by the sickening Natalie Ray. Well, mind you, Natalie didn't speak English at the time, so she Google translated it, and it said, Natalie Ray makes people sick.
Oh, no.
Yes. Oh, my God. It was so, and for me, I was like, oh, my God, she don't even know me. Like, why would she say that? And I would text her, and I told that. It was Corny Asada. I told that to the Corny Asada. I'm like, why would you say that? And she was like, girl, calm down. It's okay. That's what we're doing here. You need to learn your story. And that was another thing what was exciting for me, to learn the culture, to learn about how the people talk here, where is that came from, where it started. And, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting to learn the new stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought it was fucking hilarious, because she's like, she said I made people sick. And then Aju was like, yeah, well, that's still true. You do kind of make people sick. All right, Nat. We are so glad that you've joined us on our podcast. They can find you at Natalie Ray SF on Twitter, right?
Yes, Natalie Ray SF on Twitter, Natalie Ray SF at Instagram, and Natalie Ray, you can find me on Facebook, too.
All right, you guys, go see her. She is beautiful. Go check her out. Follow her and support her.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, she is wonderful. She does make you a little bit sick, but...
just a little bit.
Anyway, no, she is sickening. So, and we love you, and we are so glad that you joined us, Natalie, always.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me at this podcast, and I love both of you.
Aww. All right. Bye, girl.
Natalie.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Natalie Ray, you guys.
Natalie is amazing, and she's a great performer. She's got an incredible story.
Right.
And honestly, of most of the people in San Francisco, she is one of the ones who I think Drag Race should scoop up in a second. The fucking story alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had two fake Russians on Drag Race. Like, let's get a real one on there that's got, like, a truly...
Yeah.
Wrenching story. Jesus. I mean, like, yeah. Come on, you guys. She left her country because they came bursting through the doors, like, shooting guns and shit. Yeah, I was just devastated when she told about how in Russia, it's not just a situation like here, for example, Pearl and I, or anybody who's a member of the LGBTQ community, might find ourselves the victim of a hate crime, right? Like, right. It's a possibility. It's still a possibility. There, if they find out you're gay, they'll kill your whole family. Yeah, like
hate crime goes right out the window. There's no
hate crime, because yeah. Actually, there, killing a gay person is considered like a good thing.
Right.
You know, the Russian president came outright and said there are no gay people in Russia. No gay people in Russia. Like, what are you talking about? You're foolish. There's no gay people in Russia. And unfortunately, we are aware that that is the perspective of many countries around the world. People who are listening to this podcast right now in a variety of places around the globe experience that same kind of persecution and oppression and fear on a daily basis. And, you know, we say it probably ad nauseum, but, you know, personally, my heart goes out to those listeners out there who are experiencing that. And I am, for one, glad that we provide, you know, a little bit of interesting levity for you, some celebrity interviews, some kiki, some laugh.
You know.
So, all right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to have on with us...
Kristen Maldonado from Pentatonix, bitch.
Yes, we will have that and more on this Party Foul Radio. Party Foul Radio is proudly sponsored by Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Available at fine retailers near you, Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants includes a full line of lubrication for every orifice, ranging from masturbation creams to anal creams, and standard water-based and silicone-based lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants are the solution for all of your personal lubrication needs. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier LGBT news, entertainment, and travel destination website. That's GuideToGay.com. Go visit GuideToGay.com to find out what's happening down under, as well as for coverage of LGBTQ-related events around the world. That's GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
We are Pentatonix
from Arlington, Texas.
Mitch, Kirstie, and I are the trio. We're the best friends.
These five unknowns came out of nowhere to set our stage on fire and revolutionize a cappella music. It led to a successful album, sold-out concerts, and hundreds of millions of YouTube views. Now they've returned to show us what earned them the crown. Please welcome Pentatonix.
Hey, this is Kirstie, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio. With you, I'm making baby.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Miss Poet Almar. Pearl Tease is taking a quick break while we go to this pre-recorded interview. We just heard from Kirsten Maldonado of the multiple-time Grammy Award-winning group Pentatonix. Kirsten's new album, Love, L-O-V-E, it's an EP. It's available now on iTunes for download. It includes a number of single releases, including fabulous videos. She looks so gorgeous. And we are excited at this time to have her joining us right here on Party Foul Radio. Hi, Kirsten. Hey. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. I spent the morning listening to the EP, and so it was exciting for me to hear. It must be exciting for you to have it available and out for the world.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's been awesome.
Okay, now, as a gay person, of course, drawn to Pentatonix for obvious reasons, but I think that when I was listening to this record, I was reading it into it in a political sense almost as much as a romantic sense. Is there a political undertone to some of these tracks on this record?
For me, personally, it was more about love and acceptance of things, and it was a bunch of different things that all kind of coordinate with my life that are mostly... They're mostly just about love in general, and it kind of just depends on what person it was kind of fighting against or what person it was kind of learning it from or understanding it from. But yeah.
Well, the reason specifically that I said that, for example, is that when I was listening to See It, that sounds as much to me like a commentary on today's politics as it could a spurned lover addressing a former relationship. Like, I see who you are. Sure. You know, you fooled us, but I see it now.
Yeah, thank you. I wrote that before all this crazy was happening, but I love that you can say that. I mean, that's kind of a goal of a musician or an artist, too, is that it can mean a bunch of different things to whoever kind of sees it. No pun intended. But thank you.
I could just be reading way too much into this, you know what I mean? You could just be writing about, like, oh, I was in love, and then I wasn't in love. But I was thinking about the fact that, for example, you grew up in a political environment that in Texas, which I lived there for 8 years, so I kind of know the experience of what it must be like. And then having connected so early with two men who were gay, obviously, you know, as an ally, that brings a certain kind of public scrutiny from your peers. And so that's kind of when I was listening to Bad Weather, for example, I was like, this sounds like it could apply to something similar to that as well.
Yeah, Bad Weather is more like, I guess, all-encompassing for a bunch of different things. It makes me think of a lot of different reasons that I've seen my friends be put down over the years, or honestly, a lot of it. I mean, and for me, it relates to a very specific event in my life, too. But I also think, too, I always see, like, you know, people being really shitty on social media and, like, just hate on each other, whether it's because of who they love or who they identify as, or people just being so just dumb and mean and hateful for no reason. And I always just try to encourage the fans to, you know, stand up for themselves. And it's important to accept yourself and believe in who you are and not let all that hateful talk just bring you down and ruin how, like, special each person is. And so yeah, I think that one is more like the anthem for everyone, I think, just because I used to say that, you know, like, everyone be nice to each other, and, you know, everything's be fine, but it's not always they are. And so that's kind of like my anthem for them.
There's only so many times one can turn the other cheek, especially in the face of repeated situations which are almost identical.
Totally. Well, I mean, and it's funny that you mentioned See It. Like, See It is kind of, for me personally, that, like, moment of, like, you know, I think for me, I always tried to be very naive and very hopeful with all my situations that I was a part of, and I always just tried to be like, well, you know, I'll just keep being, you know, really nice and really blah, 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 and maybe they won't, you know, be mean to me, or maybe they won't say those things to me, or, you know, whatever anymore. But it's not that at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Like, I think I learned from personal experience that you have to take action, and not as violent action by any means, but you have to take action for taking care of yourself and for standing up for yourself and being that where you can't just hope for the best sometimes. And I just want to really empower my listeners to feel that. Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, you're positive too, but, you know, it takes more than just wishful thinking sometimes, you know.
Right. Well, I think that you speak to the fact that for people who have a bullying mentality, and as a person who was bullied in school and spoken horribly of, like bad weather, I think that when I tried, the harder I tried to ingratiate myself to the people who were saying terrible things about me, the worse sometimes the behavior became, because people of that mindset see kindness in response to force, whether that's verbal or physical, as weakness. People, sometimes you have to, like, really stand your ground in a forceful way, otherwise people will just simply walk over you.
Yeah. And I think you have to always, like, ally yourself with people that care about you. I don't know. I feel like my experience was, like, I was just hoping that, like, if I would be very kind and very still set in who I am, even though it was continuously rocking my world and I was trying not to let it was like the people around me were also being rocked by that person too, because it was like, you know, a bully is going to be a bully at the end of the day, and it's like, if you have to stand up for yourself too, and you can't expect everyone else to come and run your aid, it's like you have to kind of stand your ground, and I think that's really important. And I think I always was very quiet, and I important to be there for yourself and for others. You know, it's important to be there for others too, but you can't be there for others if you're not there for yourself.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that this stems from a specific incident. Do you care to share what that specific incident was?
No, it's a little personal.
Yeah, I respect that.
It was just like, I mean, I'll kind of like lightly dust on it. I mean, I always had an ideal, you know, point of view on life and things. And I don't think I personally owed up to all my mistakes or all my, like, all the, you know, negatives. You know, everyone goes through things and they're like, oh, I could have done that better. I wish I had done that. But, you know, I always think, like, well, I learned that, you know, next time I need to do this. But I think, like, I don't know. I always shrunk away from the really difficult confrontational situations. And I think I just always was like, well, if I'm nice. And a lot of people don't view things that way, and there's just conflict. And I just, like, yeah, it was just sad. But, I mean, I'm happy that I went through it, because I never encountered something like that. And I think it's important to, like, you know, my lesson that I learned was very important to, like, that I need to, like, step up for myself, and I need to take action, and it's, I can't just hope that God or the universe or whatever will, you know, be like, oh, but she was being so nice back, and, like, that will help. It's like, no, I need to be motivated every day to take myself out of that and to bring myself up and to, you know, so, yeah, I think it's important.
As fans of yours, we know that you are in a nice, potentially, like, lifelong, hopefully lifelong relationship at this point. And I was wondering how much of this album is built around the experiences with your fiancé. I mean, for example, I can imagine that Naked was almost written as a love letter, potentially, for your experience with him.
Yes, absolutely. It definitely was. And I think, I mean, Jeremy's been really amazing. I'm pretty, like, you know, gloriously positive and naive in a way. But I never met someone that challenged me so much, and we are so different in so many ways, but he challenges me every day to be better, and it just brought me up so much, and I owe pretty much, like, all of the start of this album to him, because he was there for me when I was in a rough spot, and I, you know, wanted to start my own stuff, and he, like, helped me find the people and got, drove me there to my first writing session and sat there with me so I wouldn't be, like, freaked out. And actually the first song that we wrote was Naked. And so, yeah, he's just been so crucial in my journey of just honestly, like, finding myself as a person and as an artist. Yeah, he's amazing.
Now, that leads me to a question that has really been on my mind, because anytime a person steps away from a group for a little while, you know, when you're part of something like a group like Pentatonix, obviously there's a collective mentality that has helped guide the direction musically that the group takes over the 7 albums that you guys have put out. What is it like to step away from that and kind of forge your own identity as an artist? You know, stepping away from something that's so protected, you know, you feel like you're part of something larger, and now to be on your own and have this opportunity to find out who you are, is it exciting or is it scary?
I mean, it's very, very exciting. And I thought at the beginning, I was like, oh, it's scary. And I don't know. I had a lot of, like, hesitations. Like, will I be able to steer the ship? And the second that we started writing and the second that I met my team and we started building all these ideas, I was just, like, so inspired. And I think it was because, you know, I love being able to fulfill such a huge and special part of myself with Pentatonix. But I also, like, there's still so much more of each of us, honestly, that people don't often get to see within the group, because we do have to live in a group mentality and in a group umbrella, because we have to be partial to everyone. It can't just be, it's a group. It can't be about a specific person. And so it was really lovely and really therapeutic to be writing about my own experiences or about things I feel passionate about, and really inspiring and honestly really encouraging in a way for me, because I think in the past it was really daunting writing for Pentatonix, because it was like, you know, it has to be acapella and it has to be pop and it has to be this, and there were so many, like, we want it to be, you know, XYZ. And with this, it was just very freeing. We didn't put that on it. We did it. And so it was really awesome to discover myself without limitations and to see what that person and what that was, I guess, you know? And I think, too, I'm, like, very excited to write for Pentatonix, write for other artists, write for anyone or collab with anyone in the future, because I think now I have the confidence and I kind of know what my voice is now. But before, I maybe didn't, you know?
One of the things that I associate so much with Pentatonix, for example, is that you have reworked some really classic songs in a way that is still fresh, but very much pays tribute to what the songs were. Whereas with your solo work, this album is extremely contemporary, very much in tune with what is happening right now in music. And I was wondering how you discovered what you were going to be and who you're going to be as that solo artist.
In the beginning when I started writing with the team that I worked with, we just started playing influences. And, I mean, honestly, I listen to so much different kinds of music, so many different kinds of music. And I think it all influenced me in different ways, whether it's, you know, how I'm singing on the record or how I'm expressing myself. I think, like, I've always said I love Sarah Marlis because of how she's able to express herself in her songs. Like, her lyrics have always just been so, so beautiful to me. And then, like, James Blake, I love him for his production and his musicality. Even without using words, I think you just, you know, you feel so much from just the music, just his production. And so I just went about it, honestly, and that's kind of what came out, and it all, like, fit under that same realm. Once I started writing a couple more songs, I was like, oh, I kind of see the throw line here. So it was just, like, yeah, I was very, very freeing and very fun. And I honestly thought it would be a little more electronic, but it ended up pretty poppy in a way, too, you know? So it kind of just worked.
But as you're well aware, by having stripped out music from the background for so long, by changing the music, changing the music that lies underneath your voice, you could turn this into an electronica record easily, if that's what you wanted.
Right, right.
Every remix in the world is available to you.
Right.
Now, I have...
Yeah, so it's just fun to create and to explore, you know. And even now, like, I wrote all those songs so long ago, and I think, like, I've grown as an artist, as a person, and the music industry has been changing, too, and it's fun to write, like, you know, I've been writing other songs for the album and stuff, and it's just cool to see where those are landing, too, you know?
I am curious. Now, I don't want to dwell too much on what Pentatonix has done and what your experiences have been with that, but as a drag performer, Dolly Parton is one of my all-time inspirations for drag, and I'm dying to know what it was like to work with such a legend.
It was amazing. She is so beautiful, and like, we walked in there, it was very early in the morning, and she was like so amazing and glittery and gorgeous and was so nice, and yeah, she was just amazing. I like couldn't believe we were there. I felt like a potato next to her. It was like, she was just amazing. And I just like, it's really cool to meet someone that has been like in the music industry for so long and so successful, and yet she's still like so nice, like is so kind, and it's just like so, I love seeing that because it's so inspiring, you know. I always wonder if, like, people get kind of, like, jaded at the end of the day. You know, if they've been doing it for a long time and they're, like, just constantly thrown by it or, you know, get the same thing over and over. I'm like, are they just, like, so over it? But she is not. She was, like, so sweet and having the best time, and it was awesome.
It's lovely to know that not only is she iconic within the community for being, and I mean the LGBTQ community specifically, because she is like a fashion icon of gaudy and gorgeous and all of these things that I've always aspired to be. But she is so supportive as well and has been for decades when it was not a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. She's perfect, basically.
So, with your solo album coming out, a solo project from Superfruit coming out, and Avi has left the group. Is Pentatonix done?
No, Pentatonix is not done. We will have to find a new person, and then we'll continue on. And it'll be different, but, you know, I think it wouldn't be the same, you know? And it shouldn't be the same, because one of our members is leaving.
When I first discovered you guys as a group, I was rather blown away by the kind of social impact that an a cappella group was having in the 20-teens, you know what I mean? Like, is that still surprising to you, the kind of acceptance and widespread success that the group was able to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about just, like, connecting with your fan base, whether it's, like, through the music or through what we're talking about online, or, you know, just saying that, like, yeah, we did choir when we were young, and, you know, don't make people make you feel like it's not cool or that you're doing something strange, you know. Getting people just, we're in a day and age where it's not like how old movie stars used to be, where it was like they were too glamorous. You couldn't touch them. It's like, we're in a day and age where it's like, there's so much going on, and there's so much social media and beautiful people and et cetera, but, like, people at the end of the day want to feel, like, relatable, and they want to feel like they understand you, and that's what music is about. It's about, like, sharing experiences and people feeling something, and I think if you're, like, not relatable as an artist, it's going to be harder for people to latch on to your music and to what you're saying.
You mentioned something that's very true of this day and age in terms of the fact that there was a time when, whether you were a musician or an actor in the entertainment industry, your entire persona and what the public knew about you was shaped by a big machine. and people felt otherworldly and inaccessible. But through your YouTube channel and through your interactions on social media, the public does know probably far more about artists and performers of today than we ever have before. Does it ever feel super intrusive, though, to have so much of your life known to the public? Was a time when if you were mean to people, it was usually face to face or just behind their back or whatever. Now you've spoken to the fact that with social media, people feel particularly okay to go online and say really hateful things about people they've never met, could never possibly meet, and, you know, direct a lot of real negativity to individuals that could be really potentially harmful. I mean, I'm sure that with all of your social media following, you don't have the opportunity to read every comment that's directed towards you, but if you wanted to, you could. And it just seems like there could be so much that, if you're anything like me, a thousand people could tell you how wonderful you are, and the one person who doesn't understand you is the one that gets your attention. You know what I mean? That's how I am. So it just seems like it could be very taxing.
Right. Well, I mean, as you know, people are going to say stupid things, and now I can kind of laugh at them because I think they're funny, because I'm like, this person is obviously trolling and have nothing better to do. But, like, back when I even first started, I was in the sing-off, and I would see, like, really hateful comments. I was like, oh, my God. People are so mean. Like, it was like, very, very upsetting for someone that wasn't, like, used to it, or just in general, just to see... someone commenting on you unnecessarily, it was just mean.
As a Mexican-American and as an ally for the LGBTQ community, having come from Texas, where your home state is often on the front lines of really controversial decision-making, whether that's things directed to Mexican-Americans and the dispute about the whole wall bullshit and or recently having been in the face of the controversial trans bathroom issue, how does it make you feel to see the discussion of what's happening at home now that you are kind of much more global in your perspective?
Spoken about, or like, you know, have those types of views, and I always just think I'm like, you know, raised with. But I know that they're there. I know that they're, you know, bad people everywhere. I know that people are not bad people, I'm so sorry, but like just people that have opposing views, whatever. But I don't know. I get very frustrated. But I always just try to, you know, be very level-headed and just speak and vouch for what I believe in and what I stand for and speak up for those that can't speak up for themselves or are afraid to, or, you know, their voices don't matter in that room, and I always just want to be there for them. So, yeah, I'm rambling kind of now. But they're always, these situations always kind of have me speechless because I'm like, I just, they're just so frustrating.
I think that the unfortunate reality that we're facing, too, is that things that we used to, ideas that we used to associate with particular types of people in particular locations around our country, we do know that there are pockets of our country that have what I would consider rather backward processes of thinking about things.
Right.
I think that the unfortunate reality is now that with the current political environment, those things are becoming much more forefront on a national level, and I think that the world is beginning to associate our entire country with some of those perspectives, and I think that's so unfortunate
for
us.
Well, and I always think, too, though, I'm like, you know, but I feel like a lot of people, sorry, I don't mean to ramble on this, too, but, like, I so many people that I see and that I associate myself with and that I've grown up with, it's like, I don't know, it all depends on who speaks louder, who is the hidden pockets, and it's just, like, crazy. The world's crazy. But you just gotta stand up for what you believe in and be there for everybody. And
and a final question, I know that with this new album and your new music available, will you be beginning your own headlining tour as a solo side project while you roll this out?
Yes, I would love to. It all just kind of depends on timing, but I mean, that is definitely on the table for something to happen eventually, but it has to go through, you know, the logistics conversation. But yeah, that'd be awesome one time or sometime.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a great day and best of luck on your new album and everything that comes for you, Kirsten.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for talking to you. Bye.
Bye. I just can't shake this feeling deep in my bones, and though I know I'm better when I'm alone, I call you.
Hey, this is Kirsten, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
I call you. And we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poya Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
We just heard from Kirsten Maldonado of Pentatonix. Check out her new album, L-O-V-E. It's available for download right now. Go check out her singles, Naked and... just go check out Naked. It's the big first single off of it. By the way, as you heard in that interview, I asked Kirsten if... In fact, Pentatonix is done because we know that Superfruit has their solo project. She's got her solo project.
Girl, Abby left the group.
Yes. She made it very clear that Pentatonix is not done. And to further that concept, Pentatonix just today has announced that they will be releasing their upcoming Pentatonix Christmas tour. So, you guys, they're going to also have a Pentatonix Christmas deluxe album set. Pentatonix is going to be playing a variety of shows throughout December. They kick off for 3 days in Chicago on December 3rd, 2017, and they will wrap up on the 21st of December in New York City. They're going to be playing at Boston, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., and more in between. So tickets are available very soon. Go check that out if you want to know more about Pentatonix and their upcoming Christmas tour. But I've also, because of the fact that we just had Kirsten on, I've put out, much to Pearl's excitement, which you would never know by her, like, response,
you know.
a request to possibly get Superfruit on. We'll see. We're going to have to see about that.
I love Superfruit.
Well, right. Well, you know, in the press release, they talk about the fact that Pentatonix has won 3 Grammy Awards. They have sold over 6 million copies of their records in the United States alone. And their YouTube channel has something like 13.5 million subscribers and 2.5 billion views total for their videos. They are a massive success. So,
yeah,
you know, getting somebody like that on the podcast might be a little bit challenging, but bitch, I am not one to take no for an answer, and even if I get no as an answer, I'll go back to them again in the future. So I'll keep trying for you guys. Meanwhile, a couple of other things. I was over on HuffPost Queer Voices because our interview with from a couple weeks ago with Trans Violet just hit the HuffPost Queer Voices. Go check that out. But there's some other interesting things that are coming up here on Queer Voices. For example, this one was this one is close to home. San Francisco 49ers assistant coach Katie Sowers is the first out LGBTQ coach in NFL history.
Huh?
Right here in our hometown, basically. So congratulations, Katie Sowers, on making LGBTQ history as the first openly queer member of an NFL coaching team. Also, this was also on there, and this one, gets a snarky response from me. George and Amal Clooney give $1 million to fight hate in the U.S. They said that they are going to make a donation to the Southern Poverty Law Center in the wake of the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Of course, not only does that organization fight things like racial hate crimes, they also fight extensively for hate crimes geared towards the LGBTQ community. And, bitch, this only further supports the fact that I think that George Clooney is a homo on the DL.
That's fine.
Wow. Whatever it takes, girl. Go ahead. At least he's given some money to a good cause. Right. I really do think that he is on the DL. But, anyway. Other news relating to RuPaul's...
Girl, speaking of men on the DL, everyone and their grandma is on that Justin Bieber and his pastor, girl.
What?
Have you seen the pictures of them together? It's just... It's like... I'm sorry, even I think they're fucking, girl. Let me look up these pictures.
Oh, my God, I didn't hear about this. I've always wondered,
Yeah, so originally, when it's this, the rumor started happening, Justin Bieber had canceled a concert of his to hang out with his pastor all day, and let me find it.
Well, I'm sorry, but the fact that Justin Bieber wants to hang out with a religious figure is kind of questionable because everything about the way he's living his life and presenting himself doesn't seem like, I don't know. Justin Bieber, Pastor
That's
Rich...
That's the pastor. The pastor is fine, girl.
Where? Let me see. Girl, that is not a pastor. That is a hooker. I mean...
And look, they get real close.
I mean, I'm sorry, but... Yeah, I think that there's something going on there, too.
Wait till there's one of him, giving him a kiss on the cheek and stuff.
Oh, my God, they're a little too cozy.
Right here.
They look a bit too cozy. And the pastor himself just straight up looks gay anyway.
Right.
He looks, or at least gay for pay. I'll be honest with you. The fact that Justin Bieber is hanging out with some kind of a religious figure makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't... So, there's that. I'm getting a call, by the way, from Athena Van Doren. I just sent that bitch to voicemail.
Oh, hey, Athena.
Sorry about it, Athena. Also, on this week's Huffington Post Queer Voices... They have information about that VH1 has confirmed that there will be an upcoming season 3 of RuPaul's All-Stars Drag Race. And I got some inside scoop on this without getting too many details in advance. But I can tell you with 100% certainty that on All-Stars 3, there will in fact be a former winner competing on All-Stars.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Girl, we already talked about it. I don't know which person it is, but... I hope in many ways, I hope it's Bibi Zaharbinay, because she would benefit greatly from it.
I can understand that, but still, girl, you already won.
Well, won, but, it's on VH1. Even if she's on just a few episodes, it is going to reignite interest in her.
Yeah.
And she won almost 10 years ago, too. You have to, put it in perspective,
I don't know, maybe throw her in a challenge or as a judge or something like that, but if you won...
Well, I'm telling you right now, if I won season one or even season two, Tyra, it would do Tyra good to be back on there too. Okay, so this is some scoop about All Stars as well. I hope that this doesn't piss anybody off. I heard that Morgan McMichaels is on All Stars 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that Morgan okay, you guys, Morgan, we've talked about this before. Morgan has got a very brash personality. She's like, she's of the absolutely zero fucks given club in all things that she does. We know that because she and Tyra, she just let Tyra have it. Remember, girl, could you imagine if she and Tyra were both on there?
I don't think that's happening.
Oh my God, bitch, that would be everything though, because of all that.
It could be.
I mean, all that drama. Well, they cast this show, by the way, and filmed it after all that shit went down between Tyra and Morgan. So it could be really intriguing for World of Wonder. I wouldn't put it past them to be like, let's just capitalize on this shit that we know has been happening in the news and get these two hoes up on there and let them just go at it. Anyway, I did hear that Morgan's very brash personality brought her some conflict on season 3 of All Stars. So,
well,
I'm not telling my sources. I'm not like dishing the tea more than I should. It's already probably, you know, but the fact of the matter is that I've heard with 100% from credible sources that Morgan is on All Stars 3. There is a former winner on All Stars 3, and that Morgan, the quote that was said to me, and Morgan, if you listen to this, I'm not the one who said it, I'm just repeating what I was told. Quote, Morgan's mouth gets her in trouble again.
Well, girl.
And Morgan, I'm a big fan of yours, bitch, because you just let whores have it. So if you're going to let some hoes have it up on All Stars 3, bitch, I can't wait. I cannot wait, bitch.
It could turn people, like, against her. You never know how it's going to turn out or what some of these girls are going to say.
Right, but at the same time, Morgan has never been an audience favorite from the show anyway, because Morgan bordered on being one of the bitches of her season anyway. Morgan, I think she embraces that. She accepts that. I would also pity any bitch who has to get in a lip sync for their life against Morgan, because that bitch turns the fucking party every time she steps on a stage.
Yeah.
Girl, I want to see it. Can't wait. Cannot wait. So that should be some real fucking good TV coming to VH1. So I'm looking forward to that. I did mention a while ago that I thought that somebody from San Francisco might be cast on season 9 of All Stars. No. I'm sorry, season 9 of Drag Race. I still think that might be a possibility. I don't want to say hold me accountable for this. Pearl and the listeners, hold me accountable for this. When they announce the cast of season 9, I will tell you at that time who I thought might have been on.
Okay.
What I will tell you is that I thought the individual might be on, and then I crossed paths with the person not long after filming started. So if, in fact, they are on, they don't stay very long.
Hmm.
But we will see.
Even though I don't believe a San Francisco queen is going to be on the show, I kind of believe that we'll see some of our local designer stuff on the show. I have a feeling that we might be able to see some of Kipper's stuff on there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
I want to know who Kipper is, like, designing for that might end up on the show.
Well, this girl is definitely already on the show, and this girl has definitely bought things from Kipper, but it's Eureka.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, cool. Hopefully Eureka will... Like, I didn't know that Kipper designed for Eureka.
Yeah, quite a couple things.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Kipper is incredible. We keep talking about Kipper on the show. I've been hanging out with, like... In Hawaii, everybody considers themselves a brother and a sister, so I've been hanging out a lot with her brother, Mono, a lot lately. Mm-hmm. We'll just move on from that subject. In other news, headlines on Queer Voices, OkCupid bans white supremacists, says no room for hate on our site.
All right.
So, good for you, OkCupid.
I love OkCupid. I love that. Come on, OkCupid.
I went back. You guys, I have really been... I've been wanting to start dating again, and it's just not happening. And I went back on OkCupid, and I just don't know what it is about. Like, for me, when you go onto one of those sites or whatever, it's really hard for me to make the leap from just chatting with people to, like, going out with them or whatever. I don't know. I did have this really funny experience on there. This person, messaged me. We on OkCupid, you have to match up. Like you like a person.
To.
I thought you had. Oh well, the way I've always done it is you see the profile and you say that you like it, and if that person later on says they like you, then you're matched and you can chat.
Yeah.
So I matched with some local guy and we exchanged a few pleasantries. It wasn't like anything major. It was just like a little bit back and forth. Yeah. And then he didn't respond for like 5 days. And I just sent him a very simple message. I said, hey, like, I know how this site is and, you know, I don't want to come across as pushy. And if you're not interested, just say so. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. And he responded back, well, I think that I would love to hang out with you and find out if we can be friends, but I just don't feel butterflies. And I was like, who fucking sees an OkCupid profile with like 4 pictures and a little bit of information and feels butterflies? Like, I mean, I suppose it's possible. Like if you see somebody's photo and you're like blown away by them.
Do you want to see my profile?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
I get messages all the time from like, from people that don't necessarily like you. But I mean, so I know you
that don't like
to,
me.
No, that don't like.
I was like, how the fuck, why are you getting messages? By the way, I like your profile, but I hate Poya Del Mar.
Do you want to read the profile or just see the pictures?
So
what type of person are you, Poyo?
Well, oh, fuck. Well, where to go, bitch? I do want to see. This is the thing. I actually always read the profile. Like, of course, I look at the photos first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the person looks attractive, then I read the profile. Okay. So you guys, Pearl's photos are less slutty than I'd imagined they would be.
I'm not a hoe, girl.
You are a hoe.
No.
But her pictures don't necessarily imply that she's a tramp. So, she's listed at, oh shit, as straight, queer, trans woman, transgender, single, non-monogamous, 5'7", average build. Black Pacific Islander, speaks English, working on university, drinks socially, which should say drinks continuously.
I don't drink that much anymore.
Omnivore,
girl.
Doesn't want kids. She's an Aries. Trans woman born and raised in San Francisco. Not many SF natives left here. Currently in a polyamorous relationship. Sorry for the all caps. I promise I'm not yelling. And people just always somehow miss that. I consider myself to be a driven, creative, and high aspiring individual that is constantly fighting and surviving, being a victim to society and its social norms with a smile on my face. Long term goal, become an inspiration to trans youth and be someone they can look up to. What I'm doing with my life, full-time day job with nonprofit with a focus on mental health here in SF, radio personality on 2 different podcasts, entertainer.
Well, that needs to be updated.
So you should message me if you want to. I'm generally a pretty nice person. Being trans in this world is still pretty rough, so I'm typically not going to message you first, just in case you didn't read my profile. I don't want people to get the assumption I'm trying to fool anyone, and I know how guys can act once they realize they were, quote, accidentally attracted to a trans person. Oh, very nice. And you're not connected, doesn't connect your Instagram?
Well, I haven't done that. I don't need all that.
Well, I'm going to let Pearl read my OkCupid profile now, just because of the fact that, you know, I think that it's important to get the feedback of somebody who sort of knows you. And so, obviously, I don't have any pictures. Mine is not, like, focused on my drag at all. Pearl's not in drag. And she's just Pearl. You know, she's not,
like, I mean, your screen name is kind of, I know it's not ho-ish because I think.
She's commenting on my screen name. And my screen name is actually my actual initials.
Yeah.
But people often ask if it means post-exposure.
Yeah, that's
whatever.
What it looks like.
And I'm like, no, those are my real-life initials.
Okay, so your photos are good, but your photos do kind of like, I would assume that you have a more of a build in person than you actually do.
So,
that's just
okay,
an assumption
so,
I would make.
So she's thinking that I'll be more muscular in person than my photos show.
Oh, and she queens out in the first sentence, I like Wonder Woman drag shows and pro wrestling. Grandma said I'm handsome. My mom thinks I'm hilarious. Oh, that's cute. Oh, my ideal match must love at least or like dogs very much. I'm a single dad to 3 adorable pups. Are you really one of the... Well, I guess you do consider your dogs kids.
Yeah. I mean,
I always think it's so funny when you get these people that
my dogs are my kids, bitch.
I guess so, girl. Okay. Decent, moderately attractive, That's weird. I think that's weird when people put that on their post. I mean, on their page or on their profiles. You shouldn't have to tell me you're attractive. Oh, intelligent verse bottom. You guys heard it here first on Party Foul Radio.
Girl, you heard it everywhere.
Basically an open book.
Well, you know, you first of all, you don't want to know, I almost did not put that verse bottom thing in there. But because of my pictures, everybody who hits me up is always like, woman! Honey, they're like...
Girl, you wrote a fucking story about here.
I'm a writer, you guys, so it should go without saying that my profile is detailed and it's fucking OkCupid.
You should write, that should be the first thing there. Well, I'm a writer, so just so you know, my profile is going to be okay,
in all caps.
Right.
Just somehow people miss this.
I can't tell you how many dates I've been on and people were like, polyamorous, what? And I'm like, it was one of the first things on my profile.
No, I believe that. I believe it. And for me, if I see that in a profile... I would not
respond. She rhymes, girl.
Yeah, I wouldn't respond to it. I don't think it's not because I judge that negatively, but I recognize that in a dating sense, that's not really where I'm...
What you're looking for.
I'm looking for.
Okay. Oh, and you're I love how open and honest you are on here, girl. I mean, I'm pretty honest on mine, too.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very detailed on mine because I'm an older individual... Not like an old person, but I'm an older individual, meaning that I have more defined ideas of what I'm looking for. And I do think that the fact that I know what I want...
27 to 50?
27 to 50. Well, actually,
how old are you? Time out.
44.
Wait, you're like 44. I thought she was like 42 or something the last time we talked.
No, girl. I've been 44 every time we've talked, except when I was 43 when we started out. I actually do... need to change that.
I was going to say, because the oldest you put that you date is 50.
I would like to date up to 55. I'm not going to date somebody who's 70, bitch.
Would you not date someone who's like 57, 58?
I think it would very much be determined on...
That's not that much older than you.
On...
Especially considering...
I definitely think that 57 to 60 is in a completely different mindset than 44. I say 27, and I really should jack that to 30 because
right.
I think that in your 20s is a very different mindset than 40s. So with pearls, see, this is why it's helpful what we were talking about, you guys. I can now adjust my thing. I'm going to say 30 to 55. So it's like basically my preference, to be honest, is 10 years plus or minus of where I'm at. Hmm. So anyway.
Yeah.
If you guys are out there, I mean,
right.
I mean, I do say that, like, I live very publicly working in the nightlife industry and enjoy knowing many, many people in the community. As a result, I'd enjoy spending one-on-one time with someone special, though. Mine is very geared towards, like, I want romance. Mm-hmm. And it's why, for example, right now I'm, like, feeling a little tormented and I'm not going to get into it, but I've been spending a lot of time with some really cool people who happen to be really attractive, and It's like... Though it's not romantic, like, it's...
But what does being attractive have to do with anything?
What I'm saying is I've been spending a lot of quality time with some people who are very attractive, and it's fulfilling, like, that desire I have for, like, an intimate, emotionally intimate connection with somebody I'm attracted to. Mm-hmm. And so it's causing some, like, issues for me. Like, I'm really finding myself emotionally fucked up. Anyway... Pearl was quick to be like, girl, that ain't never happening, bitch. Anyways, you guys,
our feelings are hurt. It's okay, Pearl. You'll find a new man.
My feelings aren't hurt by you. My feelings are, like, I am really emotionally sensitive right now. Poor Shags has, like, gotten her head bit off by me, like, 50 times in the last month.
I'm sure she don't care.
She's, girl, you could tell. The bitch is like, fuck, I stepped on another eggshell. I mean, I'm a little bit more emotionally fragile right now than I usually am, but... Anyway, you guys,
me too. Tell me about it. Anyway.
We have surpassed our time. Of course, I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve. This bitch is like fucking... She's like, oh my God, there's my heart. Hold, please. Let me fucking build a wall around it on my sleeve. Her sleeves are heavy as fuck because they're made out of bricks.
Whatever, bitch.
Anyway, you guys, this has been episode 80. We're so glad that you joined us. We will be back with more Party Foul Radio next week. Until then,
bye.